morning, everybody.
Good morning, Brent. Hello, everybody in the chat already. Yeah. Need to fade the music down. There we go. I didn't hear a word he said. Oh, good morning, gang. Sunny in the UK, they tell us. The weather report here in Eastern Ontario is sunny, bright, but mediocrely cool, making us all grumpy.
Yeah, we have a cooling trend. We're under 104 today, so feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, well, tough life.
Yeah, it could be that.
There was no frost on the ground here this morning. At least we've got that going for us.
What's that?
Frost? Yeah, I know. It's a last name. It's that guy in the neighborhood. Sometimes we wake up and he's out there on the ground. Okay. He has a rough life.
Well, that's, yeah. That's
nice. Very cool.
For those of you that don't know, I live in Arizona, so.
Mm-hmm.
Opposite of where Chris is.
Yeah, not polar opposite quite, but a large difference much of the year, that's for sure, weather-wise, which is always why we end up in this weather track at the start of things. Plus, everybody likes to chime in. It's always actually kind of fun to find out how things are in everybody's world. Eric's got a balmy 60 degrees in sunny Michigan. So, yeah, a couple of notes there, Brent, that maybe your mic is a little bit low today.
Yeah, let's take care of that.
Yeah. We'll work on that. While we're doing that, hey, we have Rance Green with us here today. So while Brent's working on that, Rance, why don't you give us an introduction to yourself? Tell us a little bit about you, and we'll start there while Brent's working on his sound.
Sure. Thank you, Chris. I'm forward to Brent. I'm in Dallas, Texas. So hello, everybody. It is great to see all of you. I am a story designer, and the people that come to me are looking for story solutions. And actually originally from North Carolina, so I don't see anybody from North Carolina here, but I studied acting, and then I went and got my master's in choreography. So naturally, I'm an instructional designer now. but en route of New York City and over to Texas, I ended up in a position where I was very fortunate that the company was looking for a good storyteller who could transform their compliance training into story-based training. So I knew how to write stories, and I learned how to do instructional design along the way. And not that I was totally ignorant of it. I did have a lot of training experience, but as far as the art and science of instructional design, I picked that up. So then I began to share my work with people, and people were like, "Hey, how do you do this?" I'm like, I don't know. I just write the stories, you know, I just make it happen. And so that's when I began to do a little bit more introspection and like, okay, how would I teach somebody to do what I do? And that's that was kind of the birth of story design and the one I've presented over the years. And folks have been really receptive and taken story design into their own training programs and made some fantastic training through it.
Hmm.
And then last month, I spent all of last year. Dennis says vinegar based sauce. Yeah. Carolina man. Oh, yeah. Pork too. But this is the book. This came out last month. It kind of is a comprehensive view from if you're an instructional designer, this is like perfect. It's like written for you. Because it starts with analysis, design, development, all the way through implementation on how, and even some evaluation stuff in there. So But it's all from a storytelling point of view, and it you actually learn through the stories that are in the book.
Oh, very cool. It's awesome when things are actually put into action. Done the way. So what caught my ear when you're describing the one of the first projects, they the group that wanted storytelling brought to their compliance. Maybe just give us a sense of how you started that first project, even like where you came from on that.
Sure. Well, I think that my approach to instructional design coming into it, guys, just from a completely different world, which I think there's a lot of us in this field that are like that. When I came into this project where I was designing compliance training that was story-based, I thought, I began to stakeholders. I'm like, okay, tell me what's going on in the workplace. And I found that wasn't actually enough. I needed to do what get the stakeholders to actually tell me what they wanted employees to do as a result of training. And that sounds very basic and very, no kidding. You really want to know that. Actually, yeah, you do want to know that, but it's difficult to get it out of a stakeholder, especially in a compliance setting where they're like, just aware of our policy. They just need to be aware of our policies. I'm like, okay, well, what does the policy say that you want people to do? Well, if you've ever looked at policy, you know what it says. It says you don't do things, right? You don't do this, you don't do that, you don't do this. And that's not performance. That's, I don't know what you call that, non-performance. That's a non-performance objective there for you. I don't want you to do this. Okay, well. So really trying to gain the trust of stakeholders and say, okay, and drill down to, okay, what are the actions that you want people to take? Because without action, you don't have training. If you're not asking people to do anything, you don't have a course. And if you don't have action, you don't have a story. There's no way you can create a story without it. And if you can, and so I gathered actions from the stakeholders, and then I created these relatable characters because I knew who my audience was, and created characters that they would relate to, and then put those characters in conflict with that action. And you have this tailor-made story for compliance that is kind of riveting. Because you are engaged, you're watching people do things, and then you're asking them to do things. And action is always exciting and fun. So if storytelling can make that kind of impact on a compliance course, then who knows what else it can do beyond that? Because compliance training has this bad rep of being the most boring, just shoot me in the head, click next till I get to the end. And so that has completely changed for this company now, completely changed the culture of training, of compliance training, and really the culture of the company. So really great results.
Very, very cool. How tell us a little bit more about the stories, because I think sometimes when people hear about stories, we kind of, I don't know, go down path, your mind might go down like the Hollywood kind of end of things. But tell us a little bit about the stories. Tell us a little bit about the characters, because I think there's sometimes a tendency as well to maybe picture cartoons or things like that too when people start talking about stories, etc. So give us a sense of within those sort of spectrums of realism to, the other end, etc., where those characters and those stories sat.
Yeah, thank you for asking that. God forbid that we represent our content with a cartoon. Our content is for a cartoon. I hear that all the time. And, or my content is just too serious for a story. When in actuality, the wonderful thing about stories is that they're so memorable and that they are so, they prepare you to take action. As you're watching someone else do something, it's actually preparing you to do that thing. So I'll just tell you a story, and then we can talk about how would you actually develop that with actual characters and some of the options you would do with that. So let's just Let's say that you are training a group of new managers, and you want to train them on how to engage employees. So that's pretty broad, right? And you really need to drill down to what are those actions that you need people to take. So let's say the story goes something like this for okay, so the main character is Susan. All right, so Susan is a new manager, and she has to have her coffee. So Susan, new manager, great team, high performers, but lately she's been noticing a decline in some of the productivity, even some stuff like some, the quality's going down, the deadlines aren't being met. And so she decides she's going to do what every good manager does when she sees this kind of thing. She's going to have a meeting. And so she calls this meeting, and she addresses everybody and says, hey, you know, everybody, I've noticed some of the deadlines have been slipping lately and some of our quality has gone down. What's going on? And you know what the answer to that is. It's like right now it's crickets, right? The nobody says anything. And nobody on the call here can relate to that, right? Like, you've ever been in a meeting, somebody asks a question like that. Just sit around. Finally, sucked up though and says, you know, I think we're just like, you know, adjusting to things. We'll catch up. We'll catch up. Just like some lame response. So the meeting ends awkwardly. She doesn't really get any traction with the meeting. But afterwards, one of her employees comes up to her and says, hey, and I didn't want to say this in front of everybody, but I think that Janice is actually setting up meetings for her real estate business on the side during work hours. And I've noticed that Jared is on YouTube a lot on his phone all day. And I'm not sure what's going on with Brenda, but it just feels like, you know, me and Brianne are just like pulling a lot of the weight. She was just astonished and said, how long has this been going on? Oh, about a month. Why didn't you say something before now? Well, I just figured, you know, as long as the work was getting done, you maybe just didn't care. She goes back to her office and she doesn't know what to do. This is not what management expected management to be like. So that's the story. And I'll just ask you guys, our audience here, what's wrong on Susan's team? What do you feel like is wrong on her team? Any ideas?
Well, let's throw it out to the chat. Anybody got any ideas? And toss those into the chat. Give that a heartbeat. We'll all have a sip of coffee, just like Susan.
While we're doing that, and I'll just say a few things. I'm getting a little bit of feedback on myself here, so.
Well, I like what Aaron said here. If you don't have actions, you don't have training. And are meetings without actions really a meeting? Spot on, Aaron. Spot on. So, yeah, Nate saying out of touch, non-observant, no accountability, lack of clear expectations and goals, lack of accountability, not motivated, not respecting Susan as a new manager, lack of engagement. Yeah. Vast majority of them are not engaged, committed. They're not functioning as a team. Go to the people. Okay, so now we're getting to some solutions, Wendy. Go to the people individually first. No one is going to say anything real in front of the others.
Yeah.
Angela has another one, like just setting clear expectations. Excellent.
Jennifer says, Susan needs more training as a manager.
That's why she's in this course right now. Cool. Out of touch with her team. She needs one-to-one. So, okay. So you have already come up with everything that I'm going to train you on now. You have, and because it's because of the story that you are able to come up with all of the actions that I was given that managers need to train on, right? I need to train these managers on how to engage their employees, how, you know, to conduct one-on-ones, to understand what their team is doing. And so, and you're right, Darren, stories allow for that nuance, even ambiguity points don't. Spot on, man. Yes. That story that I just told you, even though it's short, creates this sense of reality and complexity that you don't get if you're just saying you need to have one-on-ones with your employees. Now you know why, and you feel it because you've experienced in the story. So how, to get back to your original question, Chris, how do you produce a story like that? How do you make it real for your audience? There's the simple all the way to the complex. You can, I just told you this story. You know, you can just tell a story. That's powerful enough. The power is in the design of the story itself, not in how it's produced. So me just telling you the story is going to be probably equally as powerful if you had experienced it in virtual reality. Mm-hmm. So you can create characters in people's minds by telling them the story. You can display characters. Doesn't really matter if they're real people, doesn't really matter if they're cartoons, because the design of the story is so solid, it's going to carry it. If you know who your audience is, like if I do training sometimes for boards of directors, I'm not going to choose probably, that's going to be a very different type of character that I'm going to create, a different look and feel than somebody, something that I would create for a call center or, you know, a large group of employees that have a lot from down to frontline employee. So the different, the types of characters that you choose, you just got to know who your audience is. That's kind of the cardinal rule of story design. And in my opinion, instructional design too. Do you know who your audience is? Mm-hmm. And that's the question. Who is your audience? What do you want them to do? And I go into the stakeholder meeting and the expert meeting with those two questions. And I need to come back with the answers to those two questions before I can really design good training, design a good story. Does that help answer?
Oh, for sure. Very, very much so. A couple of thoughts that I had was we talk about in the e-learning world, often there's the phrase, oh, it's just a page turner, which is a dismissive comment about, say, an e-learning experience. But if a book is really, really riveting and pulls you in, we call that a page turner. I've often wished we could substitute the one for the other use of the term into to the things that we make. And part of that comes from going beyond, you know, bullet points to actually using, say, things like stories then to pull people in. A radio announcer here on the CBC, one of the folks who has a regular show has talked at different times about how radio versus television, radio leaves more spaces for you as the listener to actually fill in more of the story compared to television potentially, which is somewhat similar to the way reading fiction, you know, on the page, you're bringing more of yourself into that story and therefore connecting to it. And elaborating on it, and their comments about ambiguity and those subtleties, et cetera, that we ourselves then bring in and fill in some of those gaps without even knowing it. So,
yeah, and I like what Nicholas says here. I've just started scenario being the toughest part has been developing stories that are real enough. Yeah. I think that, you know, there's a lot out there, like Kathy Moore is a great person for, you know, as a resource for scenario-based training. But I think that the tough part really, like, she's a natural storyteller. The tough part is actually creating the story itself and developing that skill. And story design really excels. It gives you those basic story building skills. using what you're already collecting as an instructional designer as the material to create those relatable characters and strong conflict. So maybe I could just show you guys the model so you kind of have a picture. Yeah. I have a visual aid for those of you who are Miss Classroom Training.
So right now I only see your icon. I don't, Brent, do you see Rants?
I see the book, yeah.
Oh, okay, perfect. It might just
this
be stuff
is,
on
this
my
is not the book, but this is no. This is the model. It's just a piece of paper. Do you, Brent? Yeah.
You yep. see it? Yep,
okay.
I got it.
Okay.
Okay, so the idea, right, is to connect story to the action that you want people to take, which in this case, you know, the itself. So there's two story elements that have to be present. Let me just ask the folks on the line today, what are the basic story elements? Just type in the chat. What are the two story elements or the story element of them? What things make up a story? We have some great resources here for scenario design. So yeah, your friend, conflict, very good.
First one
Cricket
that
says conflict and character.
It's not the first one, but it...
okay, yeah. Antagonist, protagonist, characters, conflicts, decisions. Plot, conflict, yeah. See, you guys already know all this stuff because you tell stories every day. You can tell stories every day. Storytelling is just like, it's our language. It's how we communicate with each other.
Yeah, so how much does the traditional story arc, how much does that play into it?
Let's talk about that in just a second, Brent, yeah. If that's all right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. So relatable characters is the first element of stories that have to be present in your stories for training. And you get those from the audience profile that you create. Like I was saying before, like who is your audience? That question has to be answered. And if you're gonna be able to create relatable characters, you have to know who your audience is. The second one is, and you guys have already identified it, strong conflict. And strong conflict is going to come from that action list that you created with your stakeholders and your subject matter experts that are real actions, real positive, strong actions. And then you put those characters into conflict with this, and you have a great story. And what happens when you have a great story with relatable characters plus strong conflict is that you create this wonderful thing called a desire for resolution. And you still have a space between the action you want them to take and the story. But once you've got that desire for resolution, that is where your training comes in and completes the connection between story and action. Some of you have lost my video. I'm sorry about that. I'll show you how to see all this stuff in just a second. But the whole model, right? Relatable characters plus strong conflict equals a desire for solution. Insert your training, and boom, you have stirred your audience to take action. Brent, to answer your question, what about the traditional story arc, the hero's journey, and somebody? The rising action, the climax, and all the I have found that in my workshops, it's not necessary to go into those things. It's very interesting. The story arc is interesting. It's a fun kind of brainy exercise to go through. But what I find is that people already know instinctively it's to happen because we're always engaged with stories.
Yeah.
What they aren't as, once you get them the raw materials for creating their relatable characters and the conflict, they take it from there and it's a wonderful story. So in the book itself, there are guideposts for creating characters. There are, you know, job aids and worksheets for mapping out the plot and getting you started. It's a methodology, really, yeah. That leaves less to just chance or to, you know, just solid methodology to creating a story that connects to learning. Does that help?
Yeah, for sure. I was just curious about it because everybody talks about the hero's journey and the story arc, and there's a lot of traditional images. And, you know, if you Google it, if you Google storytelling or whatever, that kind of stuff pops up. And so when yeah. normally talking about instructional design and storytelling, those types of things pop up. But I think it's really cool that you just kind of skip it because everybody's looking for that easy button, right? And a lot of times
yeah.
that story arc is everybody's attempt at an easy button.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And I think that you hit on a good point because there's a lot of books out there that tell us that storytelling is so great. Oh, and look at this story arc, isn't this pretty? But I wanted to write a book that was actually, here's how you do it.
Yeah.
Here's the practicality of it. And I also feel that story design is that for instructional design too, because I think that instructional design can also get in that realm of very high level and yeah. or very nitty gritty. Here's how you write a great learning event. Well, that's not exactly how it operates in the business all the time. And so right. story design takes you into the stakeholder conversations, into the subject matter expert conversations, and gives you tools to make those conversations yield something that you can use for instruction and, of course, something that you can use for story writing. So mm-hmm. thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah.
Donna's got a question in the question panel. And I think it's also not only just a good question, but maybe even a leaping off point because it triggers something for me. So Donna's question is, have you used video to create Bandersnatch type of learning? For those who don't know, Bandersnatch was an episode of, and I'm going to forget the series name, but it came out, about a year and change ago on Netflix. And you literally were making choices in the television program for the characters. And I think it started fairly simple, like which cereal are you going to eat today? And then things became Black Mirror. Donna threw that in. Yeah, Black Mirror. It was a specific episode of Black Mirror. Background story, Netflix actually developed a technology framework to allow this kind of choosing within a Netflix cool. streaming. You know, so it's a video, it's a television show where you're choosing, you know, the pathway of the character. And of course, it evolves into more and more elaborate world affecting decisions beyond just which cereal someone is picking.
Yeah.
What that evokes for me, yeah, aside from just the absolute wow factor of that kind of a thing is there's also a spectrum in terms of how far you go, let's call it, with implementing storytelling, I guess. And I'm thinking like that's a pretty strong complex project, and not to mention budget, all of those sorts of things. But there's also, you know, lesser complicated ways, simpler ways maybe to bring in storytelling as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So storytelling is the backbone of so many great uses of technology, and this would be one of them. also remember, keeping in mind that we're talking about instructional design. So our aim is not necessarily to bring a story to resolution.
Mm.
Our aim is to train people to do, I didn't give you a resolution on the Susan story, right? You guys actually provided some of the resolution, and really your training is that. Your training is the resolution. But for something is, it doesn't matter how complex the technology is. Yes, I've created video where you branch out, you make different choices. It can be effective. I don't know that it's more effective than just a straight up story followed by some, if you're doing e-learning, followed by slides that reflect on that story, followed by slides that give you choices, real world choices with real world resources there for you to consult. and real feedback that really, you know, moves that learner forward into taking on new knowledge, skills, and attitudes. It sounds really cool, and it sounds very immersive, where you are actually so deep into the story where you're making the choices to see where the story heads next. And that is, I think, equivalent of scenario-based training in the learning. So I have done some of that, but I would say use your time and resources using the tools you have, because storytelling doesn't have to be that highly produced to have the same wonderful effect that it has. But now I'm going to check this thing out because I have not seen it before.
Yeah, there's a couple of comments about from folks who said Minecraft on Netflix was doing something similar. And it was actually, the framework was originally done. Netflix was originally doing it with kids related programs. And then they took it a notch further for the Bandersnatch episode. Laura's popping in. I like the idea that you shared the story and the listeners had many different solutions and possibilities. If we continued the conversation, we would be learning from each other in that model. So, yes. It brings a lot of different perspectives, different points, or opens an opportunity, I'd say, for lots of POVs to be brought in.
Yes, absolutely. And Laura, that's so true, because, I mean, stories are what connect us anyway. And so if you can present a story to a group, I'll tell you another brief story. This group asked me to come in and train for a few of their teams that were really struggling with, like, the managers were showing favoritism, the employees were just basic, you know, mutual respect for one another. There was gossiping going on and that kind of thing. And they wanted us to come in and kind of like slap their hand. And I was like, well, let's approach this a little bit differently. So we created this story called, it took place in a coffee shop, and I tell this story in the book as well, but it's very powerful. In the coffee shop, employees are the main characters. And what we did, invited a group that came in for the training. It was a live training this time, and they assigned a character. And so we told this story and the conflicts that were going on within the coffee shop between the employees. You know, we had the barista who was like, quality of service was like his main, that was like what he valued the most. And then you had the innovator in the back, was like figuring out how to roast coffee beans even faster, you know? And so those two kind of come into conflict with each other. And then, you know, the person in the back makes a comment, makes the guy who's for years and is the maintenance guy feel like he's dumb. And then you have the manager who's oblivious to all of this, thinks that everything is going well, and she is praising this person who's making all these innovations. So you can see, like, compounds, it's complex. And at the end, we just asked some questions, like I asked you at the end of the story about Susan. We just asked questions and asked, you know, what's the problem? From your point of view, is there a problem at this coffee shop? And say yes, and some of them say no, because some of them don't have a problem, right? It's getting them into the skin of another character to answer the question, to help them see their own situation from a different point of view. But as they began to answer the question, they were coming up with solutions for themselves without us having to point a finger at them. So to Laura's point, they were learning from one another in a way that was very unexpected and very disarming. And the story itself, what didn't take place in an office, right? It took place in this, so it gave that healthy distance between their situation and the story situation. And the coolest part about this story is what happened afterwards. About 6 or 9 months like 9 months later, the man in that area contacted us and said, "Hey, we want to thank you for coming. And we've really made a difference in our team changed. Whenever we see ourselves kind of going down that path of old habits, we remind each other, remember the coffee shop." And that was enough. If we had gone in there with a bunch of bullet points and said, remember, and then I have said, okay, remember slide 5 and bullet point number 7, you shouldn't be doing this because the story itself contained everything that was needed for change. And that's the power of a really well-designed story, is that it stays and it makes a difference.
And it creates, in that model, it's created the safe space for people to not feel necessarily threatened because it's not really about them. The way that, you know, good training, good learning programs create a safe space for you to, well, to fail if needed in order to learn as part of that process too.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Laura's saying, how beautiful is that? Remember the coffee shop. Yeah. That's going to become a buzzword around our office now. Well, our home offices. I'm just going to talk to the wall. Hey, remember the coffee shop.
Like, remember the Alamo?
Yeah, that's a thing that only some of you will understand. The rest of us outside of Texas don't get that so much. But anyway, or outside of the U.S.,
I like what Kathy says here. She says, I find that if the story is powerful enough, it makes the rule internal. People can't articulate the rule specifically, but they internalize the need to perform a certain way. That's right. And it's the story that that makes that rule so, right?
It's interesting because it ties very closely with what we know about memory and how learning works, in that we don't really remember actual facts and details, but we remember context and we remember generalities, and we can when we're remembering things, we basically re-piece the event together based on the general things that we know. We don't ever actually remember all of those details, but I think that's why storytelling is so powerful. It helps us build that big generalized picture, and we can rebuild that in our minds when we need to recall it a lot easier than we can the details of the rule or whatever that we're supposed to be following.
Go ahead, Chris.
It brings in things too as well, like modeling of behavior as well. Opportunities for that. So very cool.
I don't know when we're supposed to end, but questions over here in the chat. Do we have time to answer them?
Yeah, let's jump. I wanted to circle back to Sandra's question. For compliance training, there are not a lot of options for open interpretation. So how do those stories end?
Sandra, I think what you're referring to is that perhaps legal is involved. there are options. And I think that for compliance training in particular, especially if your company has, you know, those core values, you can appeal to those core values as a place to kind of hit that emotion side of compliance, you know, because if in the situation with the coffee shop, you know, respect was one of the company's values. And so, you know, it's being the, you know, instructional designer in me is like, okay, well, what do you mean by that? What do you mean by respect? And so I do a lot of digging just to find out, okay, what do these core values actually mean? You know, what does it mean to have integrity? Does that mean, like, if there's, you know, if it takes you longer to do it, you should still do it the long way because it's the right way to do it? And defining what those mean, that's a whole nother conversation. But yeah, I would appeal to the core values of the company to bring in those. And life is life. I mean, life is complex. Life is gray. So presenting it as such is okay. You might need to choose scenarios are a little more clear cut, you know, that have a little, that are a little more black and white, but it's okay to make the story a bit gray. Stories don't really end. I would say end at the climax of the conflict, and allow your readers to resolve it in some way. Maybe you want to bring it in at the end of the training to show if you had, okay, so you chose this way, okay, that, and then show, okay, happy ending, you know, what a compliant employee. But that's really not exciting. You need to have conflict. You can't, people ask me often, you know, can we just do things? Yes, but that may be a story. That's not really a story, because story needs conflict. If you choose to tell stories that have no conflict, they're going to go in and then they're going to go right back out, because everything's fine. I don't need to care about these characters because nothing bad is happening to them. I hope that answers your question in some part, Sandra.
Yeah, no, I lots of stuff there. And Sandra did reply earlier already. Thanks, Rance. That makes sense. Yeah. Well, like stories, sometimes we don't really want idiotic to end, but we do have a bit of a timer involved in this case. Rance, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been a really fascinating conversation. Take a moment while we're wrapping up here to drop your contact info, et cetera, in. Brent did share a link to the book earlier on, but you've got your book there, et cetera. That's awesome. So if people are looking to connect with you, there's some details there for that to help people do that. And let's maybe put that master's degree in choreography to one more dramatic use here today as Brent pipes us out with the music. Guys, thanks so much. The chat was absolutely fabulous this week too. Lots of really good thoughts being shared in there too. Thanks so much, guys, for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. Well,
great show today, Rance. Great to meet you. We'll have you back. We'll let everybody go out there and do some stories, awesome. And then we'll have you back and we'll recap.
Awesome. Thanks, Michelle, for buying the book. I appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great rest of the day.
I'm glad everything started working for everybody. Here we go.